This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Destruction of Palestine. When the city of Qalqilya in the West Bank came under Israeli occupation in 1967, the Israeli army issued a military order to wipe out Qalqilya city entirely. The army started a campaign to destroy Qalqilya. Qalqilya is very close to the pre-67 Green Line. The Israeli army destroyed, at that time in 1967, more than 40% of the residential houses, and they did it in 9 days. In 1995, with the signing of the Oslo Accord, Qalqilya again came under the target, became the target of the Israeli army. According to the settlement, the concession, the pacification accepted by the Palestine Liberation Organization, the PLO, and Israel, and the imperialist powers, the West Bank territories came under classifications of A, B, and C. A was to be areas under the control of the new Palestine Authority. Qalqilya was to become under the Palestine National Authority's jurisdiction as part of the A classified areas. But in 2003, the Israeli army started constructing a so-called security fence, better known as the segregation wall. They did this throughout the occupied Palestinian territory of the West Bank, and particularly with Qalqilya, they targeted it. Qalqilya became a walled city, encircled from all sides, restricting the Palestinian residents' movement in and out of the city and threatening the sustainability itself of Qalqilya. Today on Taking Aim, we are going to discuss the destruction of Palestine, the intended movement of the intended plans of the Zionists to eliminate the Palestinian presence in all of Palestine. While we were in Dehesi and the West Bank for over 3 weeks, we met with the incredible staff of the Applied Research Institute in Jerusalem, the ARIJ, which is headquartered outside of Bethlehem. And the ARIJ has been documenting systematically the construction, the results of the separation wall. Ralph?
Maya, in the 3 weeks that we were in Palestine, what we experienced, and as I began to discuss in the report back last week in the call-in show while you were in meetings in San Francisco, the experience that we had in these 3 weeks, which replicated our last time in Dehesha, which is the most militant camp in the West Bank, located outside of Bethlehem, in the area known as Doha. What we experienced here was that since the 24 years that we were last there, the intensification of the war of attrition against the population has exceeded all imagination. As we've described and as we experienced, there's a vast prison camp in existence on the ground in the West Bank. People cannot even move a couple of miles without encountering checkpoints. All the land is sequestered and encompassed by vast settlements, and the Palestinians are prevented from access to the land that surrounds their villages. You can't move 5 miles without military checkpoints in which you're thrown to the ground and held up for hours. You can't move a distance of 8 or 10 miles in less than an hour and a half. You can't travel 40-minute drive to Nablus without taking 5 hours. Qalqilya is a paradigm of the Zionist project of ethnic cleansing, as as you have indicated mine.
Now, again, back to Chalcia. Chalcia, as I mentioned, the city itself has been surrounded by a separation barrier. Now, what is this barrier? The barriers, you've probably seen on TV, exist in many different forms. But the most imposing are these concrete partitions that are 8 to 12 meters, that is almost 36 feet in height, four stories. And in other cases, there are multi-line fences of fence, and then on top of that, there's another fence, a metal fence. And then there are roads and barriers where they eliminate all vegetation on either side, and military roads. And there are footprint detection tracks. And there are the electrified metal fences, which have surveillance cameras that are video cameras that monitor whoever passes by. In the Chalcia governorate, and a governorate is similar to what we would call a county, in the classification that it was agreed upon by the Palestinian Authority was three types. A, which was to be under the control of Palestinian, but then there was also Area B, and that is Area B is one where the rule was supposed to be shared. And then there is Area C. And it turns out that most of the agricultural land remains in Area C. And this is under the full control of the Israeli army. They have full control and administrative jurisdiction over the agricultural land which sustains the people of Chalcia. So you have here a situation where the people cannot get to their farms, and they can't get to their farms, and they can't get to work because it is very difficult to get in and out of these checkpoints. And in many cases, you need a permit to go from one part of the West Bank to another. For instance, you cannot enter Jerusalem from the West Bank without a permit. Ralph?
Well, Maya, in Chalcia, we see the little continuation, as I often describe it, of the ethnic cleansing of Palestine in which 700,000 people were driven out. Here is the official statement with respect to Chalcia. We're now in the 40th anniversary of the so-called Six-Day War, the 60th anniversary of what is described as the catastrophe or the Nakba. Many Palestinians call it the 59th anniversary, basing themselves upon the date of the formation of the state. In reality, I suggest it is the 60th anniversary of the Nakba because it is the 60th anniversary of the United Nations partitioning Palestine over the heads of the Palestinian people in the presence of a formal presentation by the Jewish Agency for the Colonization of Palestine before the United Nations Special Committee, in which Rabbi Fishman, on behalf of the Jewish Agency, presented a map of what was the land of Israel. This was a formal presentation, the official claims of the Zionist movement to the United Nations at the time that the United Nations was deciding whether or not to hand over much of Palestine, the majority of it, to this settler colonial movement. The map included all of Palestine, all of Jordan, all of Lebanon, two-thirds of Syria, one-half of Iraq, the southern tier of Turkey, a third of Arabia, the Egypt up to the Nile, including Cairo, and Kuwait. That was the Eretz Israel that the Zionists claimed at the time that the United Nations was handing them 55% of Palestine. And before they even formed the state, they drove out 700,000 people through massacre, bloodletting. Benny Morris, who is a distinguished Zionist historian, has acknowledged that it was a ruthless ethnic cleansing, which he now says was absolutely necessary in order for there to be an exclusive Jewish state. He said, let's face the fact that we had to eliminate these people. We had to drive them out. We had to empty their towns and villages and destroy those towns and villages. There was no other way for us to establish a Zionist state in Israel. He formally and in full declaration acknowledges. When the Israeli army seized the West Bank and the Gaza Strip in 1967, the Israeli army set out to destroy Qalqiya. As the Research Institute describes it and quotes the army, destroy Qalqiya to the ground and expel its residents. They destroyed 850 Palestinian houses out of 2,000 that existed at the time in the town, and then they proceeded to drive out the residents. The Security Council at that time condemned this operation, although doing absolutely nothing to prevent it. And some residents returned to the town where they were forced to live in tents instead of their demolished homes. And as that process was attenuated with time, they were driven out further. The Israeli occupation practices and Qalqiya governance are a paradigm of the entire operation in Palestine, and everything that flows in the West Bank flows from a plan. 48-2, Redux 1948, what we are witnessing over these 40 years in the West Bank from its inception was a calculated plan to populate the West Bank with at least 800,000 Israeli settlers and in the process to drive out the Palestinians. When we have finished settling the land, said Raphael Eitan, all the Palestinians will be able to do is run around like drugged roaches in a bottle. No ambiguity from any of the spokespersons for the Zionist state. I'm talking here about the Labor Party or Likud. It doesn't matter which one of the politicians is speaking. They all articulate the same agenda. And Qalqiya is a paradigm, and the documentation of what occurred there is instructive.
Let's look a little further at the documentation. As I mentioned, the Qalqiya governorate occupied in 1967. The first thing the Zionists did was to destroy buildings, as Ralph mentioned. They also then imposed all kinds of building restrictions on the land surrounding the actual town, that is, in the surrounding localities of the county. Over the past four decades of Israeli occupation, 13 settlements, Zionist settlements, were established on lands that were seized and confiscated from the Palestinians. The total hold of these settlements today is 27,930 Israeli settlers and growing. And this is an area of 11.88 square kilometers, 7% of the governorate area. Between 1996 and 2005, the settlers set up four additional outposts on the outskirts of the Israeli settlements. That is, they bring in trailers and they call these outposts to begin with, and then the water, the infrastructure gets built, and then the actual housing gets built. That is how the settlements begin, first with outposts, and often these are on the top of hills, and then they start moving down the hills and going for miles. They expand these then with master plans of the existing settlements, and they turn the new locations into settlement sites of their own. Let's look at some of these particular settlements. Shari Tikva, established in 1982, has 3,685 settlers. Kadunim, established earlier in 1975. Oronit, established in 1983. Karni Shomron in 1978. Zufin in 1990. Zamarot, 1985. Kadunim Zephon, 1982. Emmanuel, 1981. And also in 1981, Alfei Menashe. Givat Aha Merkazes, it hasn't been established, it's in the process, and JIT also, Nevi Orman, 1991, and Mal Shamron, 1980. Now, some of these are outposts with people not yet living there, and others are towns of 5,500 people. It all varies, or even 6,000 people, 5,500, 6,000. It these are the settlements. And then you have further outposts where, as I said, there are a few structures. Some, like Mal Shamron, has only one. And with an outpost at West Mal Shamron, there's only one structure yet. But another, Kidunim, has 20 structures in its outpost of Har Hamed. And this is the practical way that the Zionists continue. You first close off land, saying it's a military land, or you just confiscate it outright. You prevent Palestinians from getting building permits, from having access to their agricultural land. And then if the people do build on their own without a permit, the Zionists come in with bulldozers and knock down the houses. This is going on throughout the West Bank and in Jerusalem itself. While we were in East Jerusalem in the Moorish Quarter, which is right near the Al-Aqsa Mosque, it's an area where Africans have settled and people from Algeria, Chad, and elsewhere. In that area, you can see current evidence of houses being knocked down. Ralph.
Well, not only that, but in the Muslim quarter near the Al-Aqsa, right, and the former slave quarters of the African population, you have Israeli flags hanging from the houses, including one that was purchased specifically by Ariel Sharon. Wherever Palestinians live, wherever they are in their natural historic environment with their homes and their mosques and their artifacts and their lives of thousands of years, the Israelis move to remove them. Here, Kalkia and the segregation wall, and we again emphasize that the segregation wall, as it's called, is not just for segregating the Palestinians, it is for eliminating the Palestinians. The segregation wall in this town of Kalkia, which had been marked for devastation, stretches nearly 100 kilometers. 100 kilometers of 35-foot wall in this one small town. It pierces through five Palestinian villages, Azun, Atma, Arab al-Marmadin, Ash-Shamali, Mahahat, Tassin, Mansur, Arab al-Abu Farda, Wadi Arasha. It isolates these villages from the surrounding area of all their agricultural land. It's no longer accessible to the residents. They can't farm. They can't produce food. They can't even move out of their houses without specific permits from the Israelis. It encompasses a surrounding of this area by 13 Israeli settlements that are taking all the land that is cut off by the wall. 62,000 acres are seized in this fashion. What is the political impact? It redraws the political boundaries, of course, of Kalkia. It redefines the demographic balance of the governorate. 36 of the area is now cut off for absorption by Israel. It, in fact, severs the organic ties between Kalkia and any surrounding Palestinian community. It eliminates the Palestinian agricultural sector. The Palestinian farmers, as the result of the land confiscation, have lost any ability to farm. Israel has established control thereby over trade of the Palestinian population. What does this do to the population? Poverty reaches proportions where 80% of the population is living under a survival level. The unemployment reaches unprecedented levels. The increase in land prices and the shortage of any access to them makes it impossible for people even to buy homes. Thousands of citizens then have a hard time accessing the urban centers because they're cut off by segregation walls and checkpoints. They can't access health or education or social services. The harsh measures imposed on the mobility and movement of the Palestinians means there's no transportation from or to these segregated areas. This so-called segregation wall is a prison encampment that takes right out of the playbook of the Nazi operation of the Warsaw Ghetto. All social relations between Palestinians living on either side of the wall are cut off. urbanization pressure and population density before the wall and after are not to be compared. The population density of people confined in these tiny areas by walls doubles and triples. Many Palestinian towns and villages in this area now are geographically disconnected, segregated enclaves, absolute ghettos, wholly subject to brutal Israeli military restriction. What about the environmental impact? Can you imagine? The areas for landfill and wastewater treatment sites, forget it. The areas that have been designated as forests or pastures or open space or recreation areas, lost. Wildlife cycle eliminated. The Palestinian natural landscape transformed. Archaeological and historical sites that have to do with the Palestinian cultural heritage cut off and lost behind a wall that only the Israelis control. Loss of open space, which poses a threat to the sustainability of any urban or rural existence. The loss of the natural resources and of biodiversity. The isolation of the water sources. 18 major wells have been cut off from Kalkia, are now behind a segregation wall. A loss of a total annual extraction of 1.9 million cubic meters no longer available to the Kalkia. There's no water to wash, no water to drink, no water for sewage, no water for normal hygiene. This is a paradigm of what's happening across the West Bank. This is not a question of security for the Israeli state. This is a relentless siege that it's out of the biblical siege of Jericho. What is Joshua's trumpet about bringing down the walls of Jericho? They massacred all the firstborn in the first aftermath of the destruction of Jericho. They're replicating this across the West Bank, and Kalkia is a paradigm. You have to see it to experience it, to believe it. A 35-foot wall surrounding you with barbed wire and Israeli military patrols. You step 1 foot beyond the confines to which you're restricted and you risk being disappeared, beaten up, your belongings confiscated. Can anybody imagine existing under such circumstances? This is a war of destruction and attrition against the Palestinian population of the West Bank and Gaza.
Ralph, you mentioned the unemployment in Kalkia and the move to eliminate the population. 67% of Kalkia are unemployed. That's the rate of unemployment. More than 40% of the families are now turning to subsistence agriculture as a way of at least feeding themselves. That is, little plots of wherever they can find any land that they can rehabilitate to grow a few vegetables. 4,000 to 5,000 heads of families now have moved outside of Kalkia, that is, leaving their family and going into exile to find work. 3,000 have sought employment in neighboring countries for livelihood. In other words, 4,000 to 5,000 have moved outside into other parts of the West Bank, and 3,000 have moved to other countries, and that means that they have little chance of seeing their families. Now, another aspect, we've talked about the wall, but throughout the West Bank, and particularly in Kalkia, and they've done this in Bethlehem too, tunnels are now built over with the Israeli bypass roadways on top of it. Because while the Zionists have been restricting the movement of the Palestinians, they have been building highways, actual highways, Jews only highways in some cases, and Palestinians with permits allowed on some of them. Now, these Jews only highways, these highways connect from settlement to settlement and crisscross the West Bank. The Zionists then had a problem. How can the Palestinians have even limited access to each other? So what they did is they built tunnels under these highways. But the tunnels are not like a tunnel in the United States, a little underpass tunnel, where you have free access. These tunnels have gates, and the Zionists control the hours of the day when the Palestinians can go through a tunnel, and there may be a checkpoint at the tunnel, checking on who it is who might go under the tunnel. So we have here tunnels, walls, strangulation of the Palestinian population in the West Bank. The clear intention is eliminate the population. Make it so life is not sustainable, and you make the choice on your own to flee. Ralph.
And thereby lies the fundamental political reality of this utopian fantasy of a two-state solution, so-called, in Palestine. Thereby lies the full meaning of the capitulation of the Palestine Liberation Organization to this open, declared, obvious, and now implemented scheme of the Zionists and the imperialists for the removal of the Palestinian people from their land and from history. The Palestine Authority of Fatah, with the support of the Popular Front and the Democratic Front on the ground, is responsible for administering this apparatus. Funded by the Central Intelligence Agency, its opportunity is to police the population, and it shares that opportunity with its master Israeli forces, with, as Maya described, the A, B, and C zones. A for Palestinian Authority policing of the population, B for Israeli and Palestinian policing of the population, C for exclusive policing of the population, and these categories are meaningless. We were in the A zone. The Zionist troops and armored vehicles were there constantly raiding houses, assassinating people at random, targeted assassinations, surrounding a house the teenager was in and riddling it with automatic fire at random, without restriction. Palestinian people have no defenders except their own ability to resist.
Ralph, on the 40th anniversary, which we have now, of the what's called the Six-Day War, the 1967 assault on the West Bank and Gaza, Benjamin Netanyahu, former prime minister who intends to run again, spoke at a conference that was held at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs, the JCPA, that was marking the 40th anniversary of the Six-Day War, what the Zionists consider a victory. Netanyahu said, quote, "The Six-Day War was a turning point in which we turned from a fetal and fragile country whose existence was questionable into a state which cannot be defeated." He was explicit. "Since the Six-Day War, the Arab world has been trying to get us off the mountains of Judea and Samaria," referring to the West Bank, which the Zionists refer to the biblical names of Judea and Samaria. "But as long as we are on this mountain," Netanyahu said, "we are unbeatable." And he goes on to say, "Today, not only our enemies, but also our friends question the fact that we are unbeatable. That moves us away from peace and brings us closer to war. The Six-Day War was aimed at removing the question mark over our existence and paving the road to peace." Again, we have the reverse of what is true. Peace is war. War is peace.
And that population whose existence is at risk is the population of Palestine, targeted for elimination from the inception of the Zionist movement. In 1988, I published an article in Socialist Action called Palestinian Population Transfer, and I cited the Washington Post study on February 7th of that year, expelling Palestinians. It is not a new idea, and it isn't just Kahane. And it documents, this article does, the meeting that took place in the Israeli cabinet in 1967 on the eve of the Six-Day War. Quote, Sentiment seemed to favor Deputy Prime Minister Yigal Alon's proposal, the Labor Prime Minister, that all the Palestinians should be removed and transported to the Sinai Desert. Accordingly, the Prime Minister's office and the Defense Ministry and the Army set up jointly, and I'm quoting, a secret unit charged with arranging the departure of the Palestinians. The secret plan was disclosed by Ariel Sharon before a Tel Aviv audience in November 1987 when he acknowledged that there had been an organization for years arranging the transfer of Palestinians to other countries, including Paraguay. These transfers were handled by the Israeli military governor's office in Gaza. The attack on an Israeli consulate in Asunción exposed the plan and put a stop to the secret Israeli plan for removing large numbers of Palestinians to Paraguay. Over 1 million people were designated for transfer by the Israeli cabinet under the direction of its prime minister at this time.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Destruction of Palestine. Before we continue with the program, I'd like to let you know about an important event. June 23rd, a WBAI fundraiser at the Ethical Culture Society featuring Ralph Schoenman and myself, Maya Schoen. The title, The Terrorist State and 9/11. Please go to the WBAI website, www.wbai.org for more information and to purchase tickets. Remember, June 23rd, there's the lecture beginning at 7, and before then, there is a reception from 6 to 7. Again, at the WBAI website, www.wbai.org, and if you don't have access to the internet, please call the station for more details. And now to continue with our program, The Destruction of Palestine. This is a multi-part program, and we'll be continuing with this subject next week. Ralph.
The articles of that day, in 1988, by Yossi Melman, the diplomatic correspondent of the Israeli Daily Davar, and by Dan Raviv, the London-based CBS News correspondent, documented that over 1 million people were being prepared for quote-unquote transfer out of Palestine. This is not some marginal or incidental plan. This is a full prepared operational plan antecedent to the Six-Day War, of which this is the 40th anniversary. Melman and Ravi emphasize that the relocation of Palestinians is not new. The 1967 cabinet discussions show that they were drawing upon long-standing plans. What were some of those plans that were cited? Vladimir Jabotinsky's letter in November 1939. Quote, we should instruct American Jewry to mobilize $500 million in order that Iraq and Saudi Arabia will absorb the Palestinian Arabs that we remove. There is no choice. The Arabs will make room for Jews in Eretz Israel. If it was possible to transfer the Baltic peoples, it will be feasible for us to remove the Palestinian Arabs. Now, these plans were, of course, implemented in 47 and 48 with the expulsion of close to 700,000 Palestinians. But Prime Ministers Moshe Sharet and Menachem Begin, Labor and the Revisionist or Likud politicians, were both involved with a young Israeli colonel named Ariel Sharon in 1964. What were his instructions? Determine the number of buses, vans, and trucks required to transport the Arabs out of Israel. Our general sent bulldozers to demolish Arab villages near Latrun on the road to Jerusalem. Expulsion orders were issued for the West Bank city of Kalkia. Michael Dickel of the Likud took up the call, as did the National Religious Party Minister Yosef Shapira, and did Defense Minister Moshe Arens. The quote, the Palestinian population must be expelled from the Israeli Triangle, the north of Israel, from the West Bank, and from Gaza. The Palestinians will be placed on trucks and sent out. expel the Palestinians, or risk losing control of the land of Israel. This is the agenda. Yoshi Ben Aharon, Deputy General of the Office of the Prime Minister, declared in Los Angeles, Israel has a reputation of not waiting until the potential danger becomes actual. The potential danger that he's describing is a growth in the Palestinian population. Expel them. Remove them. Operational plans on the ground. Everything we're describing in the West Bank and Gaza does not happen incidentally or accidentally. It is part of the continuing plan for the removal of the Palestinian population, as I say, from their land and from history. Last week, I cited the seminal study of Anthony Kuhn, Urban Planning in the West Bank under Military Occupation, which estimated in April 1991 that 60% of the West Bank had already been appropriated outright, while the majority of the remainder will be subject to blanket restrictions on use, leading to outright expropriation. That's on page 202 of this report. And indeed, Deputy Mayor Yigal Rosenthal, this is at the time of the, before the Madrid conference, pointed from a height to all the surrounding countryside and proclaimed, "You see those empty hills? We will cover them with homes and shops. The settlements will be the new geographical center of the State of Israel." James Baker set a date for a Middle Eastern conference, but Newsweek wrote, "It's too late for a land for peace deal on the West Bank. The settlements have public schools, colleges, kindergartens, movie theaters, tennis courts, soccer fields, shopping malls, 102-room hotels, industrial parks with 75 factories producing everything from electronics to textiles." That's just a description of the one settlement in Ariel. What we are describing here is a concrete plan on the ground. Yisro Shofat Harkavi of Hebrew University explained to Newsweek what is meant by self-rule. It boils down to letting the Arabs decide what they will have for lunch that day. The Israeli military will be in charge of all defense and security forever long, however long the Palestinians are allowed to remain. Public relations rationale for all this, there is no ambiguity about what is involved here. Here is the last word on the scheme by the State Department at the time. The Palestinians see their land slipping away, and it focuses the mind wonderfully. And the Hannibal Lecter of American journalism, Thomas Friedman, celebrated this conclusion in the New York Times on October 20th of that time. There are three water tables in the West Bank. Israel has taken 75% of that water. The same is true of the land issue. The only potential growth for towns in the West Bank lies in open land. Already 70% of it has been subject to Israeli control, quote, unquote. In assessing how Palestinians are to be reconciled to Israeli facts on the ground, Friedman states, Israel has a list of about 25 areas of administration for temporary Palestinian authorities: garbage collection, traffic collection, and some local education. Independent state in the West Bank and Gaza? What is utopian? This fantasy that any wing of the Zionist movement ever intended any such self-determination in even a fragment of Palestine? Or the reality of what this was all about? Pacification. All this bleating about peace and land for peace is a cover for a scheme of removal of the population and for the subjugation of those who are not removed.
Isolation and ghettoization is what is taking place on the ground. Supported by the imperialist powers, the Israelis, the Zionists, in constructing a segregation wall, divided the West Bank into two areas: an eastern segregation zone encompassing almost 30% of the West Bank, and a western segregation zone that has the rest, adds up to 40%, 10% in the east of it, and 30% of the segregation in the Jordan Valley. Why the Jordan Valley? That is the fertile valley for agriculture. So let's look at a little more of the results of the segregation while we focused on Kalkia, because of the destruction of Kalkia in 1967 and the ongoing strangulation with the Warsaw Ghetto type encompassing of Kalkia. But that is also taking place in other towns in the West Bank. Anata, Bet Hanina also have been strangled, have strangulation with the large walls with terminals. When we first arrived in Bethlehem, we took a bus that took us to a terminal. I could not believe what they call this terminal with these 36 feet walls and a maze that you have to walk through in order to get through security. In order to avoid going through these terminals, the Palestinian Authority has built a very weaving road, a road that goes through the mountains in switchbacks that goes from town to town in order to provide any access for the Palestinians. And that is why it takes hours upon hours. And still, when you go on these switchback roads, you come across checkpoints and you come across obstacles. Bethlehem itself is being strangled with the variety of walls, the tunnels, the checkpoints, and these terminals. And Jerusalem, the sections of East Jerusalem that have been encompassed by settlements, growing settlements. It's hard to call them a settlement. They're actually new towns. And that is squeezing the Palestinians out of Jerusalem, making it not viable for them to see, to get to work or to live there in Jerusalem itself. Part of the segregation zone is a seam zone, which is a closed area. And the military regulation, it's a security command for Judea and Samaria, number 378, a 1970 declaration. And it concerns the seam area. And at the time, the military commander said, "I hereby declare that the seam area is a closed area. No person will enter the seam area nor be present there. A person who is present must leave it immediately." Article 3 doesn't apply to, 1, an Israeli, 2, whoever is given a permit by me, this is the military commander speaking, or anyone authorized by me to enter the seam area. A person who is at least 16 years of age, whose permanent residence on the day this declaration comes into effect, lives in the seam area. That person would be allowed to enter the area and stay as long as they hold a written permit that was given to him by me, or anyone authorized by me, that testifies that his permanent residence is in the seam area. To enter the seam area and leave it can only be done through passages marked on a map, a specific map in blue, and according to conditions determined by the military commander. He says, determined by me or anyone authorized by me. I kid you not, I am reading from the 1970 declaration concerning the closure of a seam area, a seam zone, and this goes on throughout the West Bank. Well,
yes, Maya, in the incredible studies that the institute that we're spending time with have done, I mean, it is the most meticulous documentation, and it's chilling in its totality, and it's actually, I mean, it makes one want to puke. What else can I say when you listen to all this mewling celebration of the so-called two-state solution in the West Bank and Gaza? a cynical operation when there was never the slightest intention of anything resembling any form of autonomy in any part of Palestine for the population. The Israeli segregation plan, the overview that is presented just in relation to the examination of Jerusalem at all alone, you talk about the segregation zone. It cuts through the western part of the West Bank. It runs north to south. It seizes the most fertile agricultural land. It isolates all the Palestinian communities in enclaves. It eliminates the territorial contiguity between the Palestinian villages and cities. It seizes the natural resources and it captures them for the Israeli settlement. In the eastern segregation zone, even without the wall or fences, just through the control of access points along the Jordan Valley and the shores of the Dead Sea, they seized an area of 1,664 square kilometers. That's 30% of the West Bank, just in this one area alone. 43 Israeli settlements have been created, and 42 Palestinian localities have been cut off. The wall cuts through the segregation zone, 40 to 100 meters wide. Double-layered fences, barbed wires, trenches, military roads, footprint detection tracks. 4 to 5 meters of a highly electrified metal fence. I mean, it's a concentration camp. The Israeli government published the revised route of the Western Segregation Plan on February 20th, 2005. That part of the wall runs for 683 kilometers. 138 kilometers of the total length is on the 1949 Green Line, but then it isolates another 566 square kilometers of Palestinian land. It encloses 98 additional Israeli settlements. That's 83% of the Israeli settler population in the West Bank. Again, 55 Palestinian localities cut off. In September 2004, the Israeli occupation forces issued additional military orders, creating a further buffer zone, 200 meters on either side of the segregation zone. So they create the wall, they create a segregation zone, then there's a buffer zone on top of the segregation zone. This is just verbiage. It's the outright seizure of the entire area and the subjugation of the Palestinian population to a great concentration camp called the West Bank and Gaza.
And, Ralph, we should point out, as I did with the military commander's rule on who's allowed in a seam zone, that so much is control, control, control of not just the general population, but of individuals. For instance, when the West Bank was under the Israeli military control directly, Hamdi Faraj, our dear friend and colleague, a journalist, they would not permit him to have a telephone. It was only with the advent of the Palestinian Authority that, in 1994, that he actually was allowed a telephone. He now has a telephone and DSL in his home. But while we were there, the DSL line periodically was cut off. There was interference with the DSL line. And this is in addition to the numerous arrests during to which Hamdi was subjected during the military occupation. Again, throughout the West Bank, and we'll discuss Gaza in another show, you have the Israelis in what is supposed to be Palestinian Authority land coming in, arresting people, as they did in Doha, the new municipality that was built by the Palestinian Authority across from Dahesh. Also in controlling travel. While we were there, Abid Rahman, who is the deputy mayor now of Doha, he does not have a permit to go to Jerusalem and consequently to Tel Aviv to take an airplane, which means he must go out through the Allenby Bridge. Well, coordination with the Jordanians periodically refused him an entrance into Jordan. That means he is captive within the West Bank. He cannot leave through Tel Aviv, and he cannot leave through Jordan.
And Radwan Abu Ayash is the deputy minister of culture. What does that mean? It means that he has office without any authority, that he is humiliated, he is a virtual prisoner, he can't move anywhere without this kind of restriction. What does that tell you about the real nature of the Palestinian Authority? You should hear Radwan on the subject.
So let's go on and continue with the segregation wall, the reconstitution of the Warsaw ghetto, this time towards the Palestinians. As we quoted Netanyahu, who's always quick on the phrases, but we can quote so many people in the Zionist leadership. On June 3, 2005, Benjamin Netanyahu stated, with reference to the Jordan Valley, that the Jordan Valley would never be included in any Israeli withdrawal. Quote, "The Jordan Valley will stay under Israeli control forever. It is the eastern defensive shield of Israel. We will not return to 67 borders, which were indefensible." And then Ariel Sharon, "The Jordan Valley, the Rift Valley, it's called the Jordan Rift Valley, is very important. And it's not just the Rift Valley we're talking about, but up the Alon Road and a step above the Alon Road. In my view, this area is of extreme importance." So we have the Palestinians wedged in a very tiny area, and it's an area that is now also surrounding Jerusalem, so there'll be no access to Jerusalem. A very tiny wedge between the western part leading up to the Green Line and Jordan, the Jordan River. So there's this just tiny, 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 I mean a few miles, tiny area, which the Zionists intend as the Palestinian ghetto, squeezing, squeezing, squeezing to make it so that its life is not tenable and the Palestinians will depart.
Well, in concrete terms, you have as much as 70% of the population in hunger. You have huge sectors that have no access to water and electricity. You have an existence which is under constant stress and duress. The Palestinian population holds on. The Palestinian population is steadfast. The Palestinian population maintains a symbol. When you go to any meeting or cultural event, when you go to any theater presentation, when you go to any manifestation of Palestinian life, there is a banner, and it bears the emblem of a key. The people of Palestine, wherever they are, maintain the keys to their original homes from which they were driven out, from the homes, from the villages, from the towns of Palestine. They hold on to their keys because they will not surrender to this attrition. However hard and however unbearable the conditions are for the Palestinian population, they endure. When you read these concrete descriptions on the ground, the geopolitical status in the Ramallah governorate, which replicate what we've described in Kalkia and in for Jerusalem and for Hebron, 128,000 dunams of forested areas excluded and eliminated from the area of the population. Ramallah governorate lies in the central part of the West Bank, considered one of the largest governorates in the Palestinian territory, an area of 848,828 square kilometers of the West Bank area, home to 297,000 Palestinian inhabitants. What has happened? The same process. Cut off from the land, huge areas seized and confiscated for 30 illegal Israeli settlements. What does it matter about legal or illegal? There are facts on the ground. There is no such thing as illegality because the state sanctions it. The consecutive Israeli governments have worked to link these established settlements with each other. They've created a network of bypass roads through the West Bank territory that stretches in length for 800 kilometers, 182 kilometers just in the governorate of Ramallah alone. These are linked roads that only the military and the Israelis can use, not the Palestinians. They have to use dirt paths and mountain roads that are viable only for a four-wheel drive vehicle with boulders placed in their way. That's the reality on the ground. The political impact, The Israeli segregation wall has redrawn the political boundaries of Ramallah governorate. It has redefined the democratic balance of the governorate. Over 12% of the area directly seized. The segregation wall, new demographic facts, forced migration among Palestinians who have lost their livelihoods, the severing of organic ties between Ramallah and other Palestinian governorates. Thousands of Palestinian citizens cut off from urban centers, from health, educational, and social services, Palestinian mobility and movement, transportation from and to other segregation areas removed. It's the same operation in each of these areas, brothers and sisters.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Destruction of Palestine. We're going to continue with this next week. You can go to our website, www.takingaimradio.com, to listen to our show again. Also, I want to remind you, June 23rd, that's a Saturday, at the Ethical Culture Society, a fundraiser, Taking Aim fundraiser for WBAI. Please go to www.wbai.org for more information. There will be the lecture and question and answer period, and before that, an hour-long reception with Ralph and me. Please, we hope to see you there. Go to the WBAI website or call the station, 209-2800, for more information. We'll be with you next week.